knowledge from elders, healers to new generations, and it is very important. So that is tied to traditional knowledge and how important the knowledge is.
And we have to end here. I'm sorry, Claudio, we don't have time to hear your last words, but thanks very much to all our guests, to Cherie, Avesh, and Claudia, and to Sarah, Summer, Lainey, Katrine, and goodbye to Shelly. This is her last day. I think that's very sad, but I wish her best of luck in her new position. And I will still be here next week. Bye-bye. I'm Esty Dinor.
You're listening to WORT Madison.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. Sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
I'm feeling a little blue.
Why's that?
Well, I want to echo what Esty was saying. We're really going to miss our news and public affairs director, Shelly Pittman.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
She has all the amazing qualities of leadership. She helps people. She pushes people, but in a kind way. She's great expertise, very egalitarian, and the best characteristic of all, she can stand us.
She doesn't hate our guts.
She doesn't hate us. Yeah, I know. It's, ding! That's a big point in her favor.
We were just saying goodbye to her, and she said the most interesting thing. She said, you guys are just, and she was, you know, saying this in a very nice way. She was, you guys are just so wart.
I know.
Like warts. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I never know how to take things like that, do we?
Thing is, we weren't always that wasn't always true, because when we started this show, the wart was a much more, the on-air content was a lot more serious.
Yes, it's true.
I mean, it's still,
we have a panoply of things.
Yeah, but I mean, but very few people on the air, like, goofed around. But now, quite a few of
people
them.
Were sort of dubious of us, I think.
It was like, no. Well, we were.
How could you be
I think people wanted to sound like public radio.
Right. Yeah. And people were saying, well, how, and I think also underlying, because we have some, and I think we are too, although not on the show, but we have some people here very seriously committed, very politically involved and so on. And I think some of the reaction we got was, well, how can you actually be like that and also try to be funny?
The children are starving.
Yeah, you know, exactly. But you know, the thing is, one of the number one responses that we get during pledge drives, and I don't want to toot our horn, but I do really appreciate this, and I want people to know that, is that many people say,
I could toot my horn.
Let's not go there. Is that people do say there's so much that sometimes you do need a little break. So it's the diversity of content, which of course has always made WORT so good.
Yeah. So anyway, well, we'll miss you, Shelly. You're the best. So. One thing we could do is move to Spain, like a lot of people.
Spain? Oh, yeah. Spain's wonderful.
There's an exodus of Americans for some reason leaving the U.S. for Spain in record numbers.
I get it.
To escape the ongoing, quote, Trump nightmare.
Oh, wow.
Purchases of villas by U.S. citizens rose by 57% in the first quarter of 2025. That makes fleeing Americans by far the biggest growing market among foreign buyers in Spain.
Wow.
So he's helping the economy.
Of Spain.
Of Spain.
I think the nightmares about Trump are one thing. It's the daymares that I'm having. That I wake up and I'm like, oh, wait, no, that wasn't just a dream. That's the real thing.
Yeah. A lot of, as you would guess, a lot of the people were, you know, people of color, and especially people of color from the LGBTQ plus community.
Yeah.
And a lot of American Hispanics are showing a special interest in moving to Spain, according to the real estate agents.
Interestingly enough, I was reading a sociological study recently, and of course, these things are hard to pin down, but there at least is a very large proportion of the population of Spain that does claim a queer identity. I mean, larger than sort of in the United States, percentage-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. Maybe it's the people feel less funny about, you know, saying it openly or whatever it is. But yeah, so I think if you're in that community and you want to find some place that's a little more friendly, that's probably the place to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the few countries where they actually authorized gay marriage, same-sex marriage, through legislative enactment. A lot of them, of course, are through courts and things like that, in a constitutional interpretation.
Oh, interesting.
But they actually did it through. I think the one thing about Spain, especially after Franco, is, you know, the church really discredited itself so badly during that period. It's like, because the bishops were like in full force against same-sex marriage. And it's like, okay, well, we know exactly how to vote now.
Whatever that guy's for, I'm against it.
I'm against it. Yes, exactly.
I was going to say, it's probably a pretty Catholic country still. I don't know
a
lot about it. Yeah. But it sounds like it's maybe more Catholic light for a lot of people.
What's interesting about that is that, you know, we were one of the first countries to not have an official church. And that seemed like a great idea back in the 1770s or whatever. But what's ended up happening is by having an official church, then people don't care anymore. I mean, you know, countries where they have official churches, participation and you know, in those churches is very, very small. I mean, 10%, 20% of the population.
Really?
Yeah. So having it as like an official thing makes it immediately something no one's interested in. Whereas if you have a competitive marketplace, we also have some of the craziest religions in the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like a lot of competition to see how spiritually crazy you can be. And so that's probably also kind of that competition.
It's the free market.
Yep, exactly.
Speaking of Catholics, and they've all decided to sell the prosperity gospel for some reason.
Speaking of Catholics,
yes,
the new Pope was in the news this week. He, first of all, he had an audience with the news outlets on Monday, and he was asking journalists to try to keep cool and not to use heated language in their descriptions of events and views and so on. Let us disarm communication of all prejudice and resentment, fanaticism, and even hatred. Let us free it from aggression.
Oh, very good.
And
I get a little warning for him.
Good luck on that.
Warning for him, though. J.D. Vance said he'd like to have a meeting with him. No, seriously, Vance says he wants to meet the Pope, the new Pope. It's like, no, not the Pope killer.
Well, the problem with J.D. Vance, of course, is he's one of these converts,
right?
You know, that is basically, I mean, the church was always authoritarian, but what's problematic is how many of these fundamentalist types are kind of like, oh, let's jump over there because they're authoritarian, and let's just, like, you know, we don't want them to stray and
ramp
any kind
that
of,
up a little.
Yeah, ramp it up, exactly.
I don't want to do too much on this guy, but our president is in the Mideast, and he met with the UAE president, and he explained something to his counterpart.
Okay.
He said, we have a term, groceries. It's an old term, but it means basically what you're buying. Food. It's a pretty accurate item, or it's a pretty accurate term, but it's an old-fashioned sound, but groceries are down.
Oh, okay. So there's this book that's come out. You probably heard about it. Jake Tapper was one of the co-authors, about how, you know, Biden was really senile and everybody was hiding it. And I think this reporting sounds plausible to me. I mean, I thought this was one of the stupidest things the Democrats did.
Right.
But here we have this, I don't know what's going on with that guy's brain, but we're here. We have the blonde mobster out there in front of all of us, just dribbling down his chin. And nobody says a word
every single day.
Yeah, so. I guess he just seems like he has a lot more energy, you know. I mean, like he's like a perpetual whatever machine, you know. And so they say, well, okay,
yeah. I guess until he falls asleep and at a funeral or a meeting or something.
But, he did fall asleep. What was he in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, he fell asleep. Saudi Arabia. Fell asleep at the Pope's funeral, and
yeah, you know,
but
that's kind of boring.
this isn't about me. Well, we all would like that.
Yeah, right. This isn't about me.
Well, it's the saying that Trump wants to be the baby at every baptism, the bride at every wedding, and the corpse at every funeral.
Well, I won't even touch that last one.
No, we got to leave that.
But for fear that the Secret Service
will
is listening.
We'll be locked up. But, so, well, I mean, I've been thinking about this a lot. I mean, the media is really, you know, you talked about the Jake Tapper book.
Yeah.
Jake Tapper?
Jake, yeah.
Jake. Mm-hmm. And, They're treating the Trump, you know, him and all of his people, they're treating like a normal presidency.
Sure.
And it's not. Yeah. It's not anywhere near a normal presidency. And you know, the idea that you kind of give the executive branch the benefit of the doubt. They say something and you report it.
Yep.
And then maybe you get a Democrat to say something different in, you know, paragraph 9 or something.
Yeah.
But these people say stuff every day that makes no sense to a person who's thinking. And reporters aren't dumb. I mean,
right,
these are smart people. They should put some context in that and say, you know, he says this, but this is not true.
The thing is, if they just would wait a couple of days, if they didn't have to make these deadlines, they could find the opposing view by just listening to him say what he says 2 days later, because inevitably it's like, these tariffs are going to be forever and we're going to do this. And, oh, wait, no, that's not exactly what happened. On the other hand, you know, so, I mean, that's what they should do.
And the tariffs is a perfect example. It's like, we're going to have 5,000% tariffs and it's, you know, big headlines, 5,000% tariffs. Well, we're not going to have 5,000.
No.
It's just whatever's rattling around.
The carnival barker. Although he's much more sinister than a carnival barker, of course.
Yeah, So I mean, I think those things need to be, like, when they go to court and they try to, you know, make these ridiculous claims about how, you know, the 14th Amendment doesn't really mean what it says.
Yeah.
And you know, they should not give that the credibility of that they used to give to previous presidents, because it's not there, and there's no mutual respect. I mean, the only reporters they talk to now are people from, you know, right wing echo chambers. So.
Right, who want to tan your balls or something? You know, like, we got the interview with the president right next to the ball tanning advertisement. I think what the judges should start doing, like the ones that have got some conscience, is they should just start saying, okay, you guys, this flimsy, crazy, made-up case that you're making right now, $5 billion fine, you know, for like just, you know, abusing the judicial system with made-up, completely unserious arguments.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that seems to be left in this country that has any, it's an opposition to what they want to do is the court system, so let them have it.
Yeah. Well, and things like the free airplane that Cutter wants to give him.
Oh, nothing's free.
Well, I know, you know. It's like when a casino gives you a free room. Yeah.
Well, he's already singing their praises.
Well, exactly. It didn't take long. And
you can find clips of him talking about how they were sponsoring Hamas, like, just a few years ago.
Right.
Again, all you have to do is wait a few minutes and you can hear the exact opposite point of view coming out of his own mouth.
They both make a good point.
Trump now, Trump then.
Well, and then same with all the crypto scams going on. Yeah. I mean, these are the incredibly corrupt things right out in the open. Yeah. And you know, I hate to blame the media because that's such a kind of a tired old trope, but my goodness, this stuff is so corrupt and so transparent.
Yeah.
You know, call it what it is. Don't just treat it like it's normal. I mean, and don't take their explanations. It's like, well, it's not really a gift to Trump. It's a gift to, you know, to the Department of Defense. And but then when I leave office, I'll take it with me. And
so to support your point of view, I just want to point out that when you cut through the flatulent smog, which is the Trump administration, the stories that really matter, if you look at like mainstream media, these are going to be like on page 15 on the paper or buried inside of some subhead somewhere. The Homeland Security Department is requesting 20,000 National Guard members to help them crack down on immigration right now. So he's vaporing on over here and saying dumb stuff and falling asleep in meetings and God knows what else. And we're all focusing on that. Meanwhile, the fascists who are working under him, I don't think he's too stupid to be a fascist. He's just a mob boss. But he's got them in the coalition. So the request came from the Defense Department And Homeland Security was directed to request National Guard troops members to help with the crackdown. This is according to administration officials who asked to be anonymous. Now, National Guard troops have normally, if you want to know what they normally do, they usually play a supporting role in enforcing immigration at the border. And that's, you know, logistics and so on. But this is internal. They're using the National Guard, basically, if they get away with this, like a secret police, where they're going to just go around. And who knows, maybe they'll be, you know, masked or whatever. I mean, Homeland Security is doing that now. So this is part of a wider push to increase deportations and arrests. And, of course, the problem is they've got quotas for this stuff, and they can't meet the quotas. And so that's why they're going down to the next level. So they've already pulled together agents from other entities like the Justice Department and Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and so on, Marshal Service, Drug Enforcement Administration. But now they're trying to get the National Guard in on mm-hmm. this.
National Guard's also pretty useful when there are natural disasters.
Yeah.
That's a really good thing for them
sure.
to be involved
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
And they won't be available for that, I assume.
Yeah. Well, once they destroy FEMA, they won't have the money for it. So that's another one that's they've been playing around with, of course, in terms of where the money goes.
Wisconsin's own Sean Duffy, the transportation secretary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
looks good with his shirt off, I heard. That was the major criterion, it seemed, for all the male members.
Hegseth,
Bobby Jr., like, I don't know how good he looks, but he tries to look good.
Yeah,
right? You know?
Yeah.
So that's their, so the women all have a certain look,
so
the men all have a certain look.
Okay, so they must have had a swimsuit competition.
They had something. To have. I think you're onto something there.
And the evening gown.
Yeah. Duffy looks great in an evening gown. I won't tell you how I know that, but I just want to say.
Well, there have been all these problems with the Newark airport.
Yeah.
That's been ongoing. And then Duffy says that they've addressed those and they've fixed everything.
They've undressed them, yes.
Well, they're good at that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he says that they've cleaned that up and it's nothing to worry about. But... This
yes,
week,
his but that's an awfully big but.
His wife, don't go there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
His wife was flying this week to, and she was going to fly through Newark.
Yeah,
and he rerouted her.
Again, don't listen to what they say. Look at what they do.
Like, Newark, are you crazy? Yeah.
I want her to live.
At least it shows he likes his wife.
That's nice. That's a good. You know, that's a good characteristic. That's yeah. unusual in the Trump administration.
It really is. That they even talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Yeah. Didn't hire her from the bride basket of Europe.
The federal Department of Agriculture building.
Yeah. That's a lovely building, by the way.
Well, not anymore. They put up a giant, giant banner. I don't know if you can. This is a video.
Oh, so. My Lord. Who is that hideous person?
They put this giant banner of
he's glowering.
Your favorite president.
Oh, my heavens.
And it's probably like, I don't know, what, 30 feet or so? It's in. Of course, everybody immediately on social media started, you know, running pictures of Stalin.
Yeah, I know. That's the first thing I would think of.
And Mao. And
Stalin's like, not so good without the mustache.
But how would you like to work there and walk in every day?
Oh, my Lord.
Have to look at this gigantic, it's essentially a billboard. It's between two pillars on the ag building. And as you said, it's a nice building. But
wow. Godfather is watching you.
Jeez. When Scott Walker got elected, Jim Doyle was the governor before that.
I remember that.
And I the state office building I worked in, we had a picture of the governor up by the reception
sure.
desk.
Yep.
You know, just a regular, I don't know.
Hi, how's it going?
Yeah. And then Scott Walker.
For some reason, that's what I think a Wisconsin governor sounds like.
Oh, exactly.
Hi, how's it going?
Hey, hey there. Want a brandy old fashioned?
Yeah. I'll take two.
Oh, wait, that was Tommy.
That's Tommy. So anyway, so Scott Walker got elected.
Yeah.
And they took down Jim Doyle's picture,
sure.
of course, and put Scott Walker's up. And it was like three times the size.
It was so funny. I may have told you the story before, but I sat behind him on the dais at one of the...
Oh, right.
It was at the Martin Luther King Day celebration at the Capitol, annual celebration. And I was subbing for a colleague who was supposed to be there. And so I was sitting right behind him. And the only thing my friends could think to
the
ask
bald
me
spot.
Was, his bald spot. I said, what does his bald spot look like? Because I was right behind him. And I said, well, what do you think it looked like? It was kind of like an ostrich egg in a nest, you know? What do you want? But remember, he said he got a bald spot because he hit his head
on
some kind of
cabinet, yeah.
I don't know what influencer door. Told him that, but, you know.
It's because you're going bald. Speaking of Scotty, his little congratulations going on here. He posted, our daughter-in-law received her master's degree at UW-Madison. Thanks to her employer for helping her further her education. So that's nice.
Yeah.
And then somebody pulled up an old tweet from him. I don't know when it was tweeted, but here's an old tweet from Scott Walker. College is un-American, literally.
Except when I do it. Wow.
Again.
Yeah. Point, counterpoint.
So there's a bunch of... let's see. There's a bunch of anti-vax legislation that's sweeping the country in different states and at the federal level, of course. But a lot of these, you know, they always have these kind of model legislation that somebody writes, usually like a think tank or something.
Yeah.
And so there's one that's kind of been used a lot as a template around the country. It was written by a Florida hypnotist.
Oh, look at the shiny coin.
I am getting sleepy. No, you just have whooping cough.
So to go back to your earlier point, Mel, about not believing anything comes out of their mouths. This week, the White House announced that while President Trump was over there in Saudi Arabia, you know, I don't know, finding, you know, gold coins in the couches or whatever he was doing over there, he said that they had secured $600 billion in deals with the Saudi government and firms.
Golf courses and hotels.
Well, part of it, again, was for the private business interests of the president. But here's the thing. It turns out that when you looked at it more closely, some of the things that they claimed were actually deals that did not involve his own personal enrichment were already things that were in the works before he took office. Oh, I mean, sure. Again, this is only May, right? So, I mean, you know that these things don't just pop into existence overnight. So... he spoke to a gathering of business leaders, the president did, at the U.S.-Saudi Investment Forum in Riyadh. And he said, I'm just going to say what he said. We are rocking. The United States is the hottest country with the exception of your country. The United States has lovely breasts, by the way. So I'm sure that's why he was thinking of it. But anyway, before turning to serious matters.
Lady Liberty.
Yeah, exactly. Here's the thing. He went through and talked about these bashing Biden and so on. But it turns out that the biggest deal that they announced was already being negotiated under the Biden administration.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, he has to, A, pretend it's his, and B, while he's at it, he has to cover, you know, the smokescreen by saying, well, Biden's too stupid and old and woke or whatever to be able to do this. But, of course, it turns out that the deal that they're announcing was one that was in the works under the Biden administration. Another similar kind of thing, which was in the news this week, and again, this should be on the very front page, either literally or figuratively, of media sources. At least 44 of the government contracts that were canceled on the orders of Elon Musk turn out to have been reinstated. So, but they're still counting these revived contracts because, of course, it was illegal for them to do this. You contract with somebody, that means you do that thing.
Somebody signs something.
Yeah, exactly. It turns out that these things, he's got them on his wall of receipts, which you can find online on Musk's little crazy group there, site. But it turns out that those things were actually reanimated. So again, he claims that they made all these deals, the president does, that were actually that were in the works back in the day, and they claim that they were making all these savings, which have since been reversed, but not removed.
We got a message from someone. Your
caller. Well, this is interesting because I'm hesitating because the caller has built into the message the fact that maybe I shouldn't say this out loud, so I don't know whether to say it.
Well, maybe we
or
shouldn't
not.
Say it out loud. Let's err on the side of caution. Yeah,
but it's a but they have a very.
Although I hear El Salvador is nice this time of year.
Let's just put it this way, from your mouth, caller, to God's ear, and if not God, then Governor Evers.
Okay.
So a very interesting suggestion on how we might keep the president from activating the National Guard.
Oh, okay. Speaking of the
Elon Musk and his efficiency effort. They said that 40% of the calls that came into the Social Security Administration in the spring had a high probability of being fraudulent. 40%.
Yeah, that's made up.
And somebody looked at that and actually looked at it, you know, examined it, and it says 2 out of 100,000 calls had a high probability of being fraudulent.
No. So. Do you know what's happening right now? And I don't have the story in front of me, but hundreds of thousands of people who were thinking of waiting until they were 70, you know, that's a point where you can actually accrue more value from Social Security. Yeah. They are basically taking it earlier because they're looking at, A, what's going on with the stock market. So whatever other individual investments they have, especially 401ks, look like they're diminishing in value. And B, they're looking at the Social Security Administration. They're saying, first of all, if nothing else, this is a wigged out mess. I mean, they're firing people like crazy. So even if it continues to exist, I'm not sure when I'm going to have my, you know, my thing processed or anything. So I can't remember the exact number. I saw this story earlier. I don't have it in front of me. Maybe if you alert listeners, if you know, maybe you want to call in. But I think it was something like in the hundreds of thousands of people that are, it's up 17% from what
sense.
It was last year. People trying to take early, but people who are planning to take it at 70 are taking it earlier because they're afraid of what's going to happen. So, thanks. You've actually created the crisis that, you know, that you wanted to avert.
Well, that's a lot of these things going on. I mean, none of these things that they're doing were a crisis. I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole on this, but I mean, immigration is not a crisis, not an invasion, for God's sake.
No.
And the economy was doing okay. I mean, obviously, you and I would like to see, you know, workers get a bigger slice of the pie and have more, you know, more equality there. But but as far as, you know, how our economy is, it was doing okay. It was doing pretty well.
Yeah.
It didn't need a massive restructuring with these stupid tariffs and everything. Yeah. I mean, and trans people, leave trans people alone. Let them pee where they want to pee. I mean, it's like...
That's what I say.
That's what I say. It's like, so, I mean, those were like the three big things. And none of those was really...
There was no crisis.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
And the things that really are bad, like climate change and health care and our aging population, totally ignored. Completely. Yeah, yeah. And the crumbling infrastructure, too.
Right,
that's totally ignored.
Yeah.
As long as you don't go to Newark, you're fine.
Yeah. Yep. I just imagine you starting to have that conversation with the President of the United States and...
Is this about me? Remember his first administration? They had to like sprinkle his name throughout the documents to get him to keep
Ginger, blah blah blah, Ginger.
Like on the PowerPoint.
Yeah, I know. There's a famous Far Side cartoon. How our dogs hear us.
Right.
Blah 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 blah, Ginger. Blah blah blah, Ginger. Yeah. I got to tell you where there is a crisis right now is in Tesla. So, you know, Tesla underwent a gigantic decline in its share price, and our old buddy Mellon Husk told the employees, hang on to your stock. Well, I don't know what's going on with the vast number of stockholders, but I can tell you one person is not hanging on to their stock. The chair of the Tesla board of directors, a woman by the name of Robin Denholm, she has not been heeding his advice. She made she's made $198 million since mid-November just selling Tesla stock that she earned for serving on the board. That brings her total profit on the sale of Tesla stock to more than $530 million since she became the board's leader back in late 2018. And one of the things that's fascinating about that is I think it was last week or the week before, we did a story about there had been someone had quoted her as saying they weren't sure whether they could continue with Musk being the CEO of the company. And of course, when they asked her, did she say that? She said no, which means yes.
Because in corporate speak.
In corporate speak.
Well, the Congress is putting together a tax bill, which I sure hope it has some cuts for the richer people.
Because they've been suffering.
They need a break.
They really do.
But these bills always become like a weird little thing where they throw a bunch of stuff in there. And this one has, someone's putting in tucking this in the corners where nobody's going to notice, a tax break for people who buy gun silencers.
Oh, my God. So we're incentivizing people buying gun silencers.
Silencers.
So who's the person that's doing that? Let's find out that guy's name.
That guy is Representative Mike Kelly from Pennsylvania.
Oh wow!
But so
that's amazing.
Because that's what we need.
So does he have a gun factory in his district or something? I mean, that sounds...
Could be. So, the FBI is disbanding one of its public corruption squads in
that.
The Washington office.
Can't imagine why.
They're also getting... I don't think I brought the story in, but they're getting rid of an office that investigates white-collar tax fraud. Or, wealthy business tax fraud. And
hey, if a tree falls in the forest, there's nobody there.
I cannot see that for a big bag of money. Yeah. So no government corruption. So
got a story out of Moscow here, which may be a vision of our own future. The head of Russia's election watchdog group was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Oh. On Wednesday of this week, he was convicted of working with, quote, an undesirable organization. That's according to the rights groups that criticized this.
It was Olive Garden, though.
A man by the name of Grigory Melkonyats, he's the founder of the Russian election monitoring group Golos. He was jailed back in 2023 after President Vladimir Putin ordered the invasion of Ukraine. And he was charged with... Grigory was charged with organizing the activities of an undesirable organization. He, of course, pled not guilty. But on Wednesday, so he's been in custody now for 2 years, but he was convicted by a Moscow court of 5 years in a prison colony. And he said he plans to appeal, but, whatever. He's still trying to be upbeat. I mean, you got to admire these folks. Wow. Mr. Melkonyat said, don't worry, I'm not losing hope. So Golos was founded back in 2000, and it documents election fraud, basically tries to figure out what's going on in all the elections. And it was in 2013 was, even though it's an indigenous group, it's a Russian group, they was charged by the Russian authorities as being a foreign agent.
Wow.
So, Golos, by the way, means vote in Russian, which is a word they haven't had a lot of use for in the history of that country. Funny, they have a word for it.
Hey, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show here on WORT 89.9 on the FM. You might be listening on the internet at WRTFM.org, or you could be listening in the future because we put this show, all of our shows, up on the archives page, and you could be listening on the podcast, thanks to Mindless Minion D-Cubed, who handles... all of the file management stuff. So we're available at Apple Pods and Spotify and all kinds of places. So, hey, I want to give a quick shout out to my daughter, my kid, Melvina.
Yeah, Melvina.
She's graduating today.
Oh, my heavens.
Yeah, so she got a degree in undeclared, I think. That's why it took her so long. But no, I'm very proud of her. She's got graduation later this weekend. And,
that's excellent.
And that'll be fun.
That's so wonderful.
Yeah, she's very happy about it. So good for her. So,
yeah.
I know a lot of longtime listeners have kind of grown up with her.
Yeah, so, I remember
she
when
was a baby when she used to
Yeah, she'd
here.
Be in here with her potty back in the day. Yeah.
Yeah
so. And now she's a fully realized human person.
Mm, yep, good for her. So anyway, very
Do you think you did a good job there? Were you a good parent?
Yeah, I did okay. I could have done better, but
she's not a mass murderer.
She's not a mass murderer. So.
Yet.
How old do most mass murderers
actually
start?
Usually younger. Yeah, usually
that's
younger.
What I thought.
Yeah. If she is a mass murderer yet, I think.
Yeah, well, she
fun.
Likes animals, so that's a good thing because a lot of mass murderers.
Oh yeah, that's right. They start bad with
are
the
mean
animals.
With animals.
Yeah, exactly.
And she does like fire though. So she likes
who doesn't
burning things. So. All right, we got to take a break. We're going to play some announcements and then come back with.
For the Pope, White Sox offered early lessons in devotion and forgiveness.
And chimp drummers.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
Wartstock is coming to Warner Park on Sunday, May 18th, and we are holding a prize raffle with over $3,350 in prizes. Five winners will enjoy tickets to a great summer music festival, as well as other fantastic prizes, including concert tickets, merch, gift certificates, and more. Weekend passes with camping to Blue Ox Festival, Boogie Down Fest, and People Fest. Weekend passes to Sugar Maple Fest, hotel stays at Ruby Marie and Marquette, gift certificates from Katie's American Indian Arts, Sardine, Dexter's Pub, The Green Room, Float Madison, and more. Check out the complete list of prizes on our website at WORTFM.org. Tickets are $3 each, two for $5, and five for $10. Drawing will be held at Wartstock on Sunday, May 18th at 5 p.m., but you do not need to be present to win. Tickets are available at the station during business hours and at our other spring events. Isn't it a great time to win a weekend getaway? Enter the Wartstock Prize Raffle and the winner could be you.
On May 19th, the Monday 8 o'clock buzz is going classical. The Hunt Quartet, made up of members of the Madison Symphony Orchestra, will perform live in WORT's Vinyl Library, playing composers from Mozart and Vivaldi to Dave Brubeck and George Gershwin. The Hunt Quartet functions as the performing group of the MSO's educational outreach program, Up Close and Musical, which brings the joy of classical music to Dane County elementary schools. Quartet members will talk about teaching young kids about music, about their upcoming shows at MUSO Madison and the Art Lit Lab, and of course, they will play live on the air. The show will also feature a segment honoring the 100th birthday of Malcolm X. That's the Hunt Quartet performing live on the Monday 8 o'clock buzz, May 19th on WORT Madison.
And we're back. Got an email from Mindless Minion number 6. He says, greeting, funny boys. I was disappointed but not fully surprised at the presentation of my Mindless Minion card in the beautiful city of Amsterdam was as advantageous as when attempting to use it here in America. Obviously, the Dutch are not fully aware of the stature that is your broadcasting greatness.
Yeah.
Regardless, I will continue to spread the word. Keep up the good work. See you at Wartstock. So thank you, number 6. Yeah. Good for you for giving it a shot.
Yep. Not sure what get the hell out of here in Dutch is. Probably.
Oh, my goodness. So I can't tell. This is just a sad story. I hate to even bring it up, but because I can't tell if it's satire or not, but I think it's true. Christy Noem wants migrants to compete for citizenship on a new reality show.
Sure.
Cosplayer Christy Noem reportedly wants the U.S. citizenship process to play out in front of the cameras. The Department of Homeland Security has been working with writer and producer Rob Warsoff to pitch a reality show titled The American. Now, The Americans was already taken because it was about a couple of Russians, so they had to say The American.
It's singular.
Where immigrants will compete in a string of challenges across the country
for
the honor of fast-tracking their way to U.S. citizenship.
Yeah. Do they have to, like, battle a lion in an arena? Because we tried that before.
They will celebrate what it means to be American and have
a national
conversation about what it means to be an American.
No, they won't.
Through the eyes of the people who want it most. This is the same guy who produces Duck Dynasty, by the way. So,
do you know what it means to be an American? Whatever the sum total of all the people living in this country, want and desire. There's no like essence of this.
There's 340 million people.
Yeah, I mean, if there is an essence, it's the devotion to democratic ideals. That's why they have to make up this BS version of Americanism, because obviously they don't believe that anymore, right?
And basically
what it just means is, I guess, like, crummy low-class white culture or something. I mean, Christy Gnome's out there from promoting it.
What they could do is take some candidates and then have like an American citizen, maybe a member of the Trump administration, and then they'd have a quiz.
Yeah.
It'd be like make it like Jeopardy.
Yeah.
And then if they win, then the loser has to leave the country.
I bet if you ask people that move here what they think, you know, that make this a destination and come here for whatever reason, you know, economic or they want freedom or whatever it is, get away from the gangs, whatever their goal is. They're probably thinking the nice thing about that country is they're going to leave me the heck alone.
Yeah.
That's probably what they've been told.
I'm going to be able to
do things and they're not going to stand in my way. There's going to be opportunity. I mean, those are the kinds of things. That's what it means, right? I mean, it may not actually have that, but that's what people think it is.
Do you see they flew in a bunch of quote refugees from South Africa? They're all white and they're sending them to Idaho.
Good.
So
good. That's where we'll
That'll teach
that's
you.
Where we'll put the pen.
but it's just this twisting of reality. When they announced that, it was like, oh, they're being, you know, there's white genocide going there, and they're in danger for their lives, so we're offering them asylum. And everybody in South Africa is going, what are they talking about?
Yeah, like, the president of South Africa did make a couple of comments. I would say tart comments
on
this topic. By the way, I read that headline earlier, and I didn't have a follow-up. I just thought it was a very clever thing to say. You know, originally, did you see that when the Pope was first elected, the Cubs were trying to claim him? They had a big sign outside of Wrigley Field that says,
did they really?
He's a Cubs fan.
Yeah, they're,
you know,
they're
and
so
and it
evil.
Was like, no, you liars.
That's them. They're evil. Satan inspired. He's a White Sox fan.
Of course he is.
They found a picture of him at the. It was like the 1995 World Series that the White Sox were in. Yeah. I don't know how they found it, but then when he was a priest or whatever he was at that point. And
Christianity is a religion of suffering. So is liking the White Sox.
Exactly.
There's an overlap there.
It's like healing the lepers.
Yeah, exactly. It only makes sense.
They set the record last year for the worst season ever in Major League Baseball.
There you go. I mean, think about it, really. I mean, there's Jesus on the cross. God didn't say, okay, we're done. It's like, no, you're going to go through with it. I'm sorry. That's it.
Jesus tried to weasel out of it.
He did at the end, yeah. I don't know.
Wait a minute. I didn't sign up for this.
Let this cup pass from me. Well, that's probably one of the most believable parts of the Bible, actually. Hey, speaking of people who died, that's a bad segue. Justice Souter passed away.
I saw that.
And many of you, of course, astute listeners that you are, probably heard he's been quoted, a quote that he made way back in 2012. And he was talking about the sort of future of democracy in America. And, you know, a lot of people on the right were very unhappy with Justice Souter because they claimed, of course, that he was getting more left-wing the longer he was in there. But, of course, what was happening was they were rushing full speed 90 miles an hour to the right, and they're looking in the rearview mirror. Things may look lefter in the rearview mirror than they actually are. So, you know.
It was a Bush 1 appointee, right?
The elder President Bush appointed him. And he had a couple of, I guess, patrons in the administration, including John Sununu, who was Bush's chief of staff.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, he was just an old-fashioned, you know, rock-ribbed New England Republican. But at any rate, he gave a talk towards, it was in 2012, towards the end of his life, and he was talking about the idea of, could there ever be an authoritarian leader in the United States? What would happen if could this happen, and what would have to be the lead up to it? And he said, the way democracy dies is an ignorant people can never remain a free people. Democracy. He didn't say that part. Democracy cannot survive too much ignorance. And he said, the problem is that not understanding how power is allocated and why it's good to have a system like what we have, leaves a void that invites a strong man. All that has to happen is one crisis, and then people will say, one person will come forward and say, it's a quote from the late Justice Souter, one person will come forward and say, give me total power, and I will solve this problem. And, of course, the thing that's really eerie about that is that it almost sounds exactly like, you remember what President Trump said when he accepted the Republican nomination the first time, nobody knows the system better than me. That is why I alone can fix it.
Well, I've got a quote here, too. It's from Douglas Adams from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Now, sure.
This was probably written, I mean, the actual writing of it was probably, what, 50 years ago or 40
years
ago?
Yeah.
So,
45, something like that, yeah.
And the quote is, the president in particular is very much a figurehead. He wields no real power whatsoever. He's apparently chosen by the government, but the qualities he's required to display are not those of leadership, but those of a finely judged outrage. For this reason, the president is always a controversial choice, always an infuriating but fascinating character. His job is not to wield power, but to draw attention away from it.
That's really good.
On those criteria, Zaphod Beetlebrox is one of the most successful presidents the galaxy has ever had.
Yep.
He's already spent 2 of his 10 presidential years in prison for fraud.
Well, that's the thing about the way in which the president is ubiquitous. You know, President Trump is ubiquitous. It does, again, as we were saying this earlier, mask all the things that are going on underneath. You know, I mean, it's like the whole National Guard thing, the way in which what's going on with what's going to go up with the tax deals and all the other things. By the way, New York City, I don't know if you saw this. They're expecting a huge drop in visits from foreigners summer. Yeah, they expect about 400,000 fewer visitors this year than they did last year, and they've been thinking that things have been getting better and better. You know, once the coronavirus passed and so on, and the New York City Tourism and Conventions Bureau had been, you know, it's only going to go up. But the latest forecast, which was released just yesterday, estimates that they're thinking that there will probably be about 800,000 fewer foreign travelers, and they're thinking maybe more domestic travelers, but it's not going to be nearly as much.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be about, they figure it'll be about a 17% drop overall for the year. Of course, that drop is being led not by Europeans, but as you might guess, by visits from our neighbors, Canada and Mexico.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Nobody wants to come to a country that's giving them a bad time. I'm a little fearful about going to France this summer. You know, I'm lucky enough because of Companion's job that we get to go to France a couple of weeks every summer.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't want to. I got to better sound pretty plausible in French, because if they figure out I'm an American, they're probably going to come after me with something, you know. So.
Yeah. I'm thinking of relocating. I'm thinking of leaving the country and moving to Fitchburg.
You're pretty close to the border right now.
Yeah. I got to get over the wall.
Right.
One of my favorite things I ever did was I sent you this photo. I was driving around the country doing something, and I was on this like practically a dirt road.
Yeah.
And there was a sign that said "Welcome to Fitchburg," and it was like two trees in a field. So I had to pull over and get a picture of it and send it to you.
So for those who don't understand why this is like a bee in my bonnet, I remember when they took Fitchburg, which was a township, just a town, just a division, a subdivision, geographical subdivision or administrative subdivision of Dane County, and converted it against Wisconsin statutes into a first-class city so that developers could build things there without having to worry about paying taxes to the city of Madison.
Sure.
And it was done during a fiscal, what do they call it? Their budget committee, the budgetary committee. They have a biennial budget where they get people from the Senate and people from the Assembly, and they get together. And they just stuck it in there because somebody got paid off by somebody. And so I've always thought the city seal for Fitchburg should be like a lobbyist shaking hands with a legislator. You know?
Like the Monopoly guy.
Yeah, exactly. You know? with like bucks hanging out of his pocket or something.
The big bag with the dollar sign.
So, you know, and at that time, there was no down, you know, like the joke was, where's downtown Fitchburg? Yeah. It's a state of mind, because it was just a bunch of cornfields
that
developers wanted to zone off so people that lived there wouldn't have to pay taxes.
Right. And what happened a lot of times is, too, projects would start out, you know, looking at Madison, and they'd try to work with Madison, and after a while they'd say, well, screw this, and then they would like move it 60 feet over the line, and they'd be in Fitchburg then.
So. Yeah, and that's you know, this is like what you were saying earlier in that quote from Douglas Adams. This is behind the scenes, the zoning things, the, you know, I mean, that's how things really work.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, most of our listeners, of course, know about things like redlining and stuff like that. I mean, all these things that look like they're just, well, that's just the way people wanted to live. It's like, no, there were entities involved in doing this behind the scenes that structured these things to benefit race, money, whatever it might be.
Right, right. So there's this guy in Rhode Island who bought his wife a nice present, a Donald Trump branded watch. It was a gift. Mm-hmm. He heard a radio ad when he was listening to his screaming right-wing radio host.
So somewhere between getting your own generator at home and night vision goggles and, you know, yeah, right.
Stockpiling some gold.
Yeah,
he heard a radio ad featuring Trump himself.
Oh, yeah. Okay. He,
and this guy said, with the president's voice, like he was amazed that Trump would be able to record a commercial.
There's a lot of people that really do a good imitation of
it. That's true. I was curious, so I went on the website, he said. Yeah. So he went to the website and picked out a pink inauguration first lady model for his wife. So that was sweet.
All right.
And it arrived, but instead of saying Trump, the T had fallen off. So it's a Rump brand watch.
It's all the same. Oh, man.
I'll tell you, the kid who glued that T on is going to get in trouble.
Oh, man. Some poor Chinese kid from the countryside.
No Pokemon
really
for you,
really
kid.
Bad shape now.
Let's see. China signs deal with Russia to build a power plant on the moon, potentially leaving the U.S.
I remember Space 1999. That's not a good idea. That's what I learned from
never
that.
Turns
I learned
out
from
well.
That documentary.
Never turns out well from those. Let's see. We were talking about the budget bill earlier, and the GOP is sneaking in a little clause in there that would make it illegal to regulate AI for the next 10 years.
Wow.
They don't want us to fall behind in the AI race, so they can do whatever they want. And on a related note, a man, where was he located? Doesn't say where he was, but this guy went to a job interview. And he had an interview with a robot.
Oh, yeah.
And he had no idea it was going to be an AI interview, and it was just very, very uncomfortable.
He should have brought his own robot. They just could have sat there, and the robot's going to talk to
Talk to my robot, yeah.
Yeah, talk to my robot. Hey, you know, one thing that robots will be doing in the future, and they're already doing this in Japan, of course, is taking care of elderly people. And this is an interesting feature of our society, of course, is we are able to prolong people's lives, but we really don't know what to do next, right? And so there's a lot more, as we all know, more elderly folks all the time, especially in somewhat diminished conditions. And so there's a lot of, you know, opportunity for people to take care of these folks and so on. But one of the things that's problematic about it is a lot of times, and I think this is coming from a good place, it's just really not very respectful, is something called elder speak. And I don't know if you've ever heard this, but elder speak is the way in which people will often talk, who are caregivers, to the elderly patients or family members, that basically sounds like a kind of baby talk. Mm. Now, I was exposed to this recently. There were some elderly folks that were downtown, and they were getting on a bus for something. And there was this very perky, bright young woman who was like, "Come on, Mr. Smith, get on the bus," you know, like that. And I kind of felt bad in one way because of what he said, but in another way, I kind of understood. He looked at her and he said, "Leave me alone, you whore." And I thought, okay, we don't need the sexism,
that's
Mr.
over
Smith,
the line there.
But I understood where it was coming from because she was so relentlessly like cutesy in her sure. way of her affect. Sure. And I think she's trying to model and portray, you know, exemplify a kind of a caring. But it's like the way we do that is like how we talk to a pet or how we talk to a baby. And so there's actually a program now, a training program. This is started by a gerontologist at the University of Kansas School of Nursing, who's trying to get people basically to talk to elderly people, even if you're in a caregiving position, in a way that is respectful and as if they are actually adults, which they are. So what they've discovered is not only is it disrespectful kind of from a moral or a social point of view, but it's also counterproductive. Just like the guy I just referred to, people will often turn away or cry or say no when you try to help them because you're basically engaging in behaviors that provide resistance to care. Mm-hmm. And you're infantilizing this person, and they feel like they're only opportunity to exert some power is to say no back to you. Like, sure. I'm a person. Stop treating me like a baby. And so this woman, her name is Christine Williams. She's a nurse gerontologist, and she's put together this program. Elder speaks employ louder volume, shorter sentences, simple words and tone very slowly. There's a kind of a sing-songy character to it, and words that you would use with children like potty and jammies and things like that are used. And studies in nursing homes show that this is very common. Dr. Williams and a colleague of hers, Dr. Shaw, they analyzed video recordings of 80 interactions, and they found that 84% of the interactions involve some kind of elder speak, which is, again, not only demeaning, but it actually is practically problematic.
Wow.
So they've developed a new program called Chat for Changing Talk. It's a 3-hour-long session that includes videos of communication between staff members and patients, which is trying to model better communication. I think that's a wonderful idea.
It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Chimps' rhythmic drumming and complex calls hint at origins of human language. Researchers have found that two important building blocks of human speech in wild chimpanzees. A pair of our studies found that chimp communication includes both rhythmic structures and call combinations,
sure.
two key elements of spoken language. Together, the studies add to an emergency early footprint indicating how human language may have evolved. The chimps would actually beat like drum beats. They would pound on the trees and things like that, and they kept better time than Keith Moon, actually, which is interesting. No, I love Keith
Moon. That's a low bar.
But he could drink more bourbon than those
I think
chimps.
It's so fascinating because they were like, well, they don't have vocalization, so therefore they can't have complex communication structures. They just do something different. Why do we have to impose our human conception of how we do these things and say, well, if they don't do it exactly the way we're doing it, they're not doing it at all? That seems problematic to me. Hey, I got a couple of quick stories from the ancient world because, you know, we like to keep up with our ancient news.
Sure.
And this one I thought was fascinating. You probably know enough about ancient history to know that the major contender for domination of the Mediterranean during the time of the Roman Empire, early Roman Empire, was the city of Carthage. And Carthage was supposedly founded by a group of people in what is in the Middle East called the Phoenicians, who were great traders and voyagers. But new studies have done, an international research team analyzed the DNA from the remains of 210 people that were in Carthage, including 196 from 14 sites in the Levant, North Africa, Iberia, Sicily, and so on. And they discovered that the Carthaginians were basically probably a lot Greek. It turns out that there was a lot of intermarriage and different groups of people. According to this, only three of the people that they looked at had a substantial Phoenician background, and many of the other ones were from Sardinia, Iberia, North Africa, and even from Greece. So it turns out that even back in the day, there was a great diversity of interaction amongst the peoples of the Mediterranean.
Well, there's one great truth about humans is that as people move around or get together or go someplace, they're going to have sex with people.
Yeah, they do that.
And then they're going to have babies. And it's,
yeah, like it's the whole Neanderthal thing. Like, well, they must have killed off the Neanderthals. No, they had sex with them.
Marry, sex, kill.
There you go. They played the game. So real quickly, there was evidence of a gladiator lion combat discovered in the yard of an English home.
Oh, I saw that.
Apparently, this was in the city of York.
Are they zoned for that?
Yeah, I know. They have crazy zoning laws over there. They, you know, Britain is rich in Roman archaeology.
Sure, sure.
And they just, somebody in the backyard says, you know, just dug it up. According to this one professor at Maynooth University in Ireland, he says, you pretty much can't shovel a spade in the ground, shove a spade in the ground without hitting something ancient and archaeological.
Oh, the mystery and the majesty.
Exactly.
The oldest rock in the U.S. has been discovered in Michigan. It's water smeaton. It contains zircons.
Ooh.
Much like the engagement ring I bought my my wife.
Let's just emphasize your ex-wife.
I know I was in trouble when she started introducing me as her first husband. It was like, all right, time to declare the weekend. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. I know there's a lot of people in town, a lot of stuff going on.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
So have a great time. Stick around. The Kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks For You with The Real Jaguar. It is 2 o'clock. You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM Madison. Pants, was great to see you.
You too, buddy.
Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, May 16th.
This is Bird Note. Conservation photographer Nopadol Paltung says that if you go out to take pictures of birds, you shouldn't just aim to take an eye-catching photo.
I think what's different in my approach is that I know the subject I photograph. I like to watch the animal that I photograph, and sometimes I would rather watch them and photograph them.
By spending long hours in photo blinds and even sleeping in them overnight, Nopadol has become deeply familiar with some populations of greater sage grouse.
To the point that I almost recognize each one of them when I look at their face because they have different marking in their face or missing few pieces of feather from fighting.
When dealing with rare and declining wildlife, keeping the well-being of the species in mind is crucial.
I think you should care about your photograph. You should care about what happened to the bird, why there's so few of them out there, you know. And that will make you much better photographer, make you much better conservationist. Conservation images can alert the public to a problem, and I want my photograph to alert people to the problem and point to the solution.
And he wants to help cultivate the next generation of photographers to keep the mission going.
That'd be my ultimate goal, to inspire younger people to do what I do, because I can't do this forever. I had a girl who was probably in